We're back, everybody, with the Wise Men Say podcast in association with the Love Supreme. Here to talk about the Leeds game, primarily. I'm Stephen Goldsmith. Now, my lovable co-host, Gareth Barker, advertised the pod earlier on Twitter. I was talking about the Leeds game, but he also said, amongst other stuff, so I'm not really sure. That's put a spanner in the works for me. So we've drafted Luke Bawley in. He's going to provide you with the other stuff. I'm just dropping that on your lap there, Luke. You've got 5 minutes to think of things to say.
Yeah, I will try and figure something out. I could talk about my Metro journey or something like that, but I can't see it. Or my New Year's, but maybe it's best we leave that one off
just
the table.
Just let the listeners know we've already done these jokes. So these are like about 2 minutes ago. We discovered.
Use that term very loosely.
We discovered that one of the mics was broken, and Luke did that material then, and it was just.
And Gareth decided he didn't like the Metro story, so you just got to have
to brilliant the first time round, Luke. Brilliant the first time.
But yeah, but you just lose something in multiple occasions.
Unfortunately, that's the way it is. So the other voice you could hear there is Graham Anderson, once of the Sun and Echo, of course. I'd like to say he's here fresh from picking the top 100 ever, no, post-war Sunderland signings, Graham, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there was a panel of four of us. There was myself and Gary Bennett and Rob Mason, the club programme editor, and Chris Young, obviously still at the Echo, and we were given the task of coming up with a hundred post-war signings, the top 100 post-war signings, which took us in a whole afternoon, and there were plenty of arguments, mainly over whether Benno should be included and whereabouts Benno should feature.
I was going to say, did he try and nab the number one spot straight away?
He was definitely pushing hard for promotion, put it that way. But I mean, what we've done is we've come up with a workable idea, roughly, of where we, you know, top 50, top 30, top 10. And I think as far as the top 10 are concerned, it's up for readers themselves to have an input and decide what they want,
yeah,
and what they think.
I was reading that today. So did you actually bother with the order of the top 10 anyway, or did you just come up with a top 10?
We needed a top 10, and there was actually half a dozen that picked themselves, you know, the likes of Brian Clough and Charlie Hurley and Kevin Phillips and Quinny. There were those where we were all agreed on, and then the final two or three in the top 10 we arrived at by committee process.
Right. Okay.
Cups of coffee and tears and arguments.
But you did actually have the running order as well.
Yeah. It's. I think it'll be really interesting for readers because obviously no one's going to agree with us. Everyone has their different opinions, but that's what it's all about. It's there to spark conversations.
Did Benno make the top 10, or can you tell us?
I could tell you, but I have to kill you. I think you have to buy the
paper. You've been doing everybody a favour then.
Yeah, but Benno, it was good fun. We were grateful for Benno to help out because obviously everyone has different areas and different people to put forward.
Okay, before we talk about the Leeds game, let's hear Gus's take on it. I was on sort of them duty at the game.
Depending on how you look at it. You know, I'm a believer that not because of the final result you need to just think you play well or you play bad, or, you know. At the end of the day, I told you last week, Man City, no? 3-2, everybody think, oh, it was tight, but we were close to lose 5-6-2. Well, today was the opposite. Okay, 1-0, it looks tight. I should finish 5-0, you know, before even they put a ball in the box in the second half. But that's us, again, both ways. So happy with the result, happy winning at home, being in the next round of this important cup. A little bit disappointed with the finishing. I think we need to be better in front of goal. Football, you know, at any level, and when it's not too much difference, you know, between Premiership and Championship team, when you're in top, you need to make, you know, two or three goals difference. Because sooner or later, the position is going to have a chance, whatever it is, a cross, a shot, or one moment of madness. And we didn't. And that was the message at half-time. And the second half, unfortunately, again, you know, we needed to change players because of injuries or illness, and we couldn't really look at something to affect the game. But it's not an excuse, but it happened in the last four games already. We keep changing players for whatever reason and not for a tactical reason. But even then, when they were better, when they improved because they had nothing to lose, the spaces that they left behind, the opportunity that we had, it was, you know, in another day, you would be really disappointed if you didn't win the game.
I noticed on Twitter, Graham, shortly after the game, you suggested it was a decent end-to-end game.
Yeah.
A lot of people would disagree with you. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, well, it's like anything. You've only got 140 characters to try and make a point, so it gets confused. I wasn't suggesting for a second that it was a great game of football, but it was one of those things where if you had a highlights package, I mean, Match of the Day was terrible in its coverage, but if it had 30 seconds where some of the other fixtures had good coverage. But my point was that actually, although it was error-strewn on both sides and it wasn't a classic, there was plenty of goal-mouth action. There seemed to be almost a goal chance every few minutes. So in terms of things to keep the fans occupied, there was a lot of stuff there. And I enjoyed it. I mean, so if you were looking at it kind of from the purist point of view, in terms of fantastic skill and that sort of thing, no, it wasn't a great game. But just in terms of the fact that Leeds were giving it a go and Sunderland were giving it a go and they were both trying to be positive, I thought it was enjoyable.
I'm inclined to agree. I think if any anybody who was neutral in the press box or whatever, or any neutral fan who had a ticket for the game, would have thought it was a decent end-to-end game. I thought I would go along with that, Gareth.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. but obviously, first half was a bit better than the second from a Sunderland perspective. But yeah, I mean, Sunderland had the chances in the second half.
As good as Gus sees, do you think? He seems to be implying we could have won 6-0 there or something.
I think in the first half, the chances that we had, we had one off the line from a genie, and Fletcher had that one over the bar that was played across the face. So, yeah, and then second half, Fletcher had two good chances, really, one in particular that he should have definitely scored. So I think he's right. I think he's right about like comparing it to the Man City game as well, where we, you know, clearly got away with it there. I mean, 3-2 was probably flattering once we opened up.
I thought that was one of the most enjoyable things from a Sunderland point of view. I think it's a great game for Sunderland to have had. First of all, they've won. That's all that counts really in an FA Cup tie. Secondly, they've won at home, and the fans haven't seen too many home wins, so that helps the players as well. But also, I thought I enjoyed. I mean, I know Alvarez was hit and miss. We'd have benefited from that, and Giaccherini was better. But you know, again, he's someone we really need to come to the party in the next 3 or 4 months. He'll have benefited from that, and even Stephen Fletcher. I know people would say if you got a hat trick, it'd have been fantastic for him, and it would have been. But just the fact he was able to miss quite a few shots, that's practice.
He's disallowed goal very well, to be fair.
I think he'll have benefited from just having some of the pressure off him. In a Premier League game, you miss one, and that's it. That's your chance gone for the game. He had plenty of chances. I always remember Kevin Phillips used to say that the key to his game was confidence, but when he was playing with Johnson and Summerby, he didn't care about missing because of another chance along the next 5-10 minutes. And I think too many games, Fletcher, I think, maybe started to beat himself up thinking, I'll get one chance in this game playing as a lone striker if I don't score.
Possibly that's true in the Premier League, though, to be fair. Yeah, maybe different against Leeds in the Cup.
But not many. But I just think a game where there was less pressure on him and he could almost afford to miss will have done his confidence good. There's a lot of positives, I think, for Sunderland from the game.
Well, I think, Luke, if we were going to speak to most Sunderland fans before the game, well, in weeks prior to this game, and you speak to people and they say, we need to find a place for Alvarez, we need to find a place for Giaccherini, this side has no creativity. So Gus went with that, and will we end up better for it?
I think we were. I think especially Giaccherini in the first half was showed a lot of what he's very good at. He's very good at finding space. He's very good at finding that sort of space in between, and he's very good at sort of finding that passing behind or finding that crucial pass. And it's what he showed last season towards the end of when we used to bring him on, sort of when the defenders were tired, and he used to find that space well. And like that Man City game away, the 2-2, where he created two assists for Connor Wickham, just doing that against a side that will push forward. And I think that's where he'll be very handy.
Do you have him in that left position then, or movement in the midfield like some people are demanding? I think not demanding, a bit harsh. Gareth's demanding it.
I think I actually agree with Gareth. I think.
Are you demanding it?
I'm not sure I'm in any position to demand it, but I think the problem is when he cuts inside. He does tend to get out-muscled or crowded out.
Got knocked off the ball a few times.
Yeah, and it's something that will happen because he's not the most physical of players. And I actually think he will be, funnily enough, I think it'll be better in games where we're under the cush rather than, say, a game where we're expected to attack and take our game, because he's someone who will find space well. And that's what we've been missing in those games where we've sort of been solid and just try to sort of keep things tight.
For the risk of sounding like a broken record here, Graham, when we discuss where Giaccherini could fit in the side on here, it's tricky, isn't it? Because now Gus went with Fletcher and the two wingers. He doesn't normally do that. He'd play Wickham on the left, and we know Barini was here last season. He likes a sort of centre-forward who can play on the left, who can come in and join on the attack. Now, we have to assume then he isn't going to start playing wingers anytime soon. Now, you can't imagine Johnson getting dropped anytime soon, so... Where does Giaccherini fit?
I don't think Gus is anywhere near really. I mean, he's making inroads, but I don't think he's anywhere near having the sort of team he wants. And I think one of the problems he's got is So that's five across the middle, which leaves you with one striker up front, and so you need goal scorers on your side more than just the one goal scorer, and that's why I think Wickham is far from ideal out on the left, and if he was here, I'm sure Connor would say the same thing. But that's a way of getting an extra striker into your side, as far as he's concerned. With Giaccherini, who you mentioned earlier, the natural place for him is out wide. But I think if you asked Giaccherini, just like Connor would say, I'm a striker, out and out striker. If you ask Giaccherini, he would probably say, because he's hinted at it before in interviews I've had with him, that he prefers to be inside.
Yeah, he said so this week, hasn't he? Yeah.
Has he? I haven't proved that interview, but he's said in the past that he likes to be more involved. I think the one of the complaints you get from a winger is if you don't get past the ball, you just become a peripheral figure. And I think he's someone who likes to be on the ball all the time. And the more infield you are, the more of the ball you see. And so his preference would be to be infield behind the main striker or behind the two, if you ever play with two strikers behind there. The problem for Poyet is how do you accommodate him and all the rest of the players on the side.
That's it, Gareth. We keep saying you want to move in the middle, but Poyet has his system where Bridcut or Cottermole sit. That's an infield that is very, very important. Yeah. So you can't really have a number 10, can you, with a formation Gus players? You'd have to maybe switch out. So mention the diamond formation again before. That one would fit them both in. I know you don't,
you don't agree with it.
Tell me.
We're just playing where Gomez plays.
Really?
Yeah. Well, if Gomez can play there, then Giaccherini can. I mean, Gomez is hardly his powerhouse, is he? I mean, people talk about with Giaccherini in the middle that he's lightweight. Well, I haven't seen anything from Gomez to suggest that he isn't lightweight.
No, but I don't think he notices as much as you do with Giaccherini when he plays.
I just think with the issue we've got at the moment, we're drawing too many games. We're solid enough. I don't think you'd be risking anything by making that change from a defensive perspective if you had Giaccherini.
Would you have to sacrifice Larson then, though?
No,
he
wouldn't. No, you wouldn't, no. You just swap them. You just swap them.
Like the way you dismissed that suggestion.
No, I don't think you need to, though, because, you know, that's functioning okay. The area that isn't functioning properly is that third midfielder, and it isn't, because you need somebody in the middle who's going to make opportunities. I'm not saying Giaccherini's the best player in the world, but if you look at the players we've got in the squad, when he gets the ball, he's the one who looks as though something might happen. And at the moment, when our centre midfielders get the ball, nothing looked like it's going to happen. I know occasionally Gomez does put balls in behind fullbacks and stuff and it looks great, but that maybe happens once, possibly twice in a game. In the Premier League, maybe once every two games. So I don't know. I would play Giaccherini in that position, because I also think that his movement benefits the whole front three. So when he starts drifting about into pockets of space, if you give him that freedom, it gives the players in front of him more space, because he drags players out, and then the movement of Johnson and it'll be Wickham or Fletcher will benefit, because that's the thing. We lack fluidity across the front. We've tried the front three, and it's I wouldn't say it's not working, but it's just lacking. It's lacking something. It's lacking a spark, and I think it needs somebody behind them to start moving about a bit. Sort of not taking risks, but you know, a calculated sort of risk where you can say the player's going to offer enough going one way, like going backwards, and he will offer something going forwards. And I think that's what you're going to get if you swap Giaccherini for Gomez.
I think a lot of fans would echo that, Graham, but there must be a reason Poyet keeps, you know, the same players keep serving.
Giaccherini came on in that position three times. And then when he starts a game, he plays wide.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a reason Poyet's not doing it.
But it's interesting why he'll put him in the middle during a game, but he won't start him from. Well, maybe he just did it because he wanted to rest Wickham. He wanted to rest Johnson. Maybe that's why. And then he could accommodate him on that left side. Maybe that's why it was. I don't know.
Well, I think the reason why he sort of plays him in the middle is that in the games where he's come on, it have been games where we've needed a goal. And so he's willing to sort of...
And when the game's stretched, he's not going to be in a situation where he's going to be putting himself at risk to get knocked off the ball as much as well. Man City, for example, the game opened right up, didn't it?
Yeah. And I just think he may... You know what Poyet likes to do is, with his squad, he likes to keep solid for as long as he can. And in maybe later in the game, he'll make those sort of changes where he thinks he can win the game. And that's why he brings Giaccherini on, because he knows maybe Giaccherini won't be quite as... him and two behind him, he won't be quite as compact a midfield as the three. And so I think that's why he does it during games and why he played them wide in that game. But I do agree with you. I think with how we've been playing,
they need to change something in that area to affect other areas, because that's the area at the moment where it's restricting us from.
He doesn't look like he's going progressing. Anytime soon, does he?
Well, might.
If I can jump ahead, I mean, sort of towards the end of this podcast, we'll be talking about the January transfer window, and you might ask me where I think Sunderland need to strengthen. I think they need, without having a shopping list, which sounds like everything, I think they need more. I think they need more pace, they need more creativity, and they need more goals on the side. And when we're talking about the Leeds game, and we'll get onto him as well shortly, Patrick Van Aanholt's pace, I mean, I don't think he's the best footballer in the world. He might get better as he gets older and he improves. I still would have preferred Marco Alonso there, who also had pace, but it makes such a difference when teams are stretched, and it makes such a difference to the creative players. You mentioned Giacchirini in the middle. The essential thing for Giacchirini, if he's in the middle, is that when he gets the ball, he's got players running off him to create options. He'll pick players out with the pass, but he needs players to be running off him, and to have that, you need pace. You need Patrick Van Aanholt or whoever, maybe one of those January recruits surging up the wing, so that Giacchirini's looking forward, ready to make the killer pass. It's pointless having him in the middle when he receives the ball, and we're a very pedestrian outfit, and it's getting past sideways and backwards and not really creating any damage. I'd like to see him in the middle if you could get him in there, and it could work, but it would only work if you got full backs making overlapping runs and really stretching the opposition, so you're getting the best out of Giacchirini, looking forward and using his passing ability.
Brings us on to, I mean, we're going to mention Van Aanholt again, but just because I mentioned originally Ricky Alvarez and Giacchirini, two players that the fans want in the side. Gareth, Ricky Alvarez, it looks like an impact sub to me, nothing more.
At the moment,
you're not going to pay 11 million quid for him in the summer.
Not, definitely not. No. I mean, at the moment, I wouldn't say he looks bad, but it just, is he what Sunderland needs? Probably not. I mean, how do you get it would be easier to get Giacchirini into the team than to get him in the team. He can play in the Premier League at the moment. He can play in one place, and that's wide. He couldn't play in the middle because he wouldn't offer that work rate that you need, that Giacchirini's going to offer.
Not just the work rate going back as well, which is the easy thing to say, isn't it? Oh, a player doesn't like tracking back. Flair players don't like tracking back. I was just confused that when we were breaking, he wasn't getting forward.
But he was ill, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, but generally, in games
mind
you're
you,
seeing
if
him...
If he was ill, then he was going to affect the game negatively.
Yeah, but
he
brought Rodwell off early because he wasn't feeling well.
I thought it was he had a problem. I think it was a muscle problem, I think, wasn't it?
I thought it was illness for the two of them. But
was it for
the
both
of them?
He
said he was tired to us after the game.
Rodwell was a tight hamstring. He took him off because he had a very tight hamstring.
He was holding his thigh as well, the back of his leg, when he went down the tunnel.
I thought he said it was tight.
I think with Alvarez, he's a funny little player. He's sort of someone who is always playing on this thin line between sort of how he's not inconsistent. He sort of just exists on this line where it all depends whether whatever he tries comes off or not. And I think he will, unlike say Will Buckley, he'll give you one or two good moments in a match, and that could, and like against City, that could be a big difference. But he's not someone you can rely on. And
it's
you think,
okay, we'll have him as a player to bring on if you're chasing a game, or you want to then win a game.
If you want to nil up or two nil up, you might bring him on. The reason
Poyet says he plays Gomez is because he thinks he offers some control in the game. Now you couldn't say that for Alvarez, could you?
No, I don't think Ricky Alvarez is not about control.
No.
I don't think.
No.
It's the manager's quandary, though, isn't it, when it comes to skillful players? You've got to play them and hope they come into form. But the only way they will come into form is if you keep on playing them. And that's the sort of situation that Poyet's facing with Alvarez. And I think that's why he was so keen to play him in the Leeds game. There's a bit of an echo about Scocco for me, in a certain way, about Alvarez, which in the sense that Poyet hung his hat on Scocco. He was convinced Scocco would come good, but he had to adjust to the English game. In the end, that just didn't work out. But Poyet had really high hopes for Scocco, and it just didn't happen. And we never saw anything in his performances to justify Poyet's optimism. And with Alvarez, the same thing. I think Poyet feels as though he could be someone who could suddenly click, and he'll be a regular match winner. But we're just not quite seeing it yet. We desperately want it to happen, but we're not seeing it yet.
I think I don't want to write him off. I think that would be unfair, because he has had the injuries. He's only had about what, 5 or 6 appearances. He hasn't played that much. And he did have that. He's had a couple of moments where he's looked good. I mean, he came on against Swansea and looked like a lovely
player.
We
can always remember that Barini in the first half of last season didn't do much.
But the thing is, I think Barini and we've mentioned Barini. We've mentioned Barini again, so that was a good effort.
I don't really mention them earlier.
Did you have to mention it? Yeah.
Never get over him.
No.
You've all tweeted his last. This point for 4 days into the new year.
Tweet his last every day.
Yeah. But anyway,
probably why he's not coming.
I think they're very different players. I think, you know, someone like Barini, you know, if you're talking about hard work,
yeah,
and you know, he probably epitomises hard work as a footballer, because he, you know, I think that's where he approaches.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to compare.
I'm just saying every day, and I'm not saying, at the same time, I'm not saying that Alvarez is lazy, because I don't think he is. He's just probably got more of a languid style. In the way he approaches things, and that's you know, footballs and different personalities, and managers have to manage those personalities
like
and
a
qualities.
Ben Arthur type.
Well, I wouldn't be that harsh on him at all. I mean, he's got a good pedigree, hasn't he? I mean, he's Argentine international.
Yep.
But we've seen plenty of Argentine. Well, not plenty, but a few Argentine internationals and whoever internationals come and go to Sunderland without even. Making an appearance, you know, so, you know, maybe, I think that's the thing, we Sunderland people, don't we? We get it, no matter who we bought, you know, everyone says we should have bought this player in the summer because he's done this at this club, and if we, I guarantee if Sunderland
got
him,
Bonnie
would have been garbage. Yeah.
I think what we're talking about is that Sunderland really lack, you know, many creative players, and Alvarez is one of them, and we're all just hoping that sort of maybe, you know, if he plays something, you'll click. I mean, like you say, he's got a pedigree, a lot of money, got the national status sort of side of things. You just hope that it'll click. So I didn't mind him playing. He didn't have a great game, but maybe sort of that'll give him a boost in training in the week, and we might start seeing the best of him.
Even in the fact he was okay, he had that effort off, like, took a deflection, clipped the top of the bar. I mean, he still did something around the box. He still offered something, which is, you know, something we haven't seen enough of from a lot of players. I think Johnson's looking quite bright at the moment. I thought when he came on, he was bright again, and you know, that's a good sign, because he tends to go on these spurts of, you know, a couple of months he'll be very good, and then he's probably not as good as you hope for the rest of the time. But he's still, even in that period, he still contributes. Yeah. Buckley, if we're looking at wide players, I quite like the look of him when he first came. He looks bang out of form at the moment, and you know, he's really struggling to adjust, I think, to the Premier League, which is a bit of a shame, but you know, I've got to give him a bit of time.
I don't want to write Buckley. I know it's very easy to with his performances of late, but I think it's too early.
24, 25.
It's somewhere mid
20s.
Yeah, he's only been there a few months. We have to be a bit more.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's
Craig Clark, isn't it? Abuse.
Yeah, it is. Craig's not abuse. A big fan, is he?
Yeah.
I think it's good to not start throwing around, you know, hyperbolic stuff about certain people. I think it's, you know, you wait and see how it pans out over time, and you know, Buckley has contributed at times. I think that's the thing. We have players who do contribute sometimes, but we need to find somebody who's going to contribute.
Well,
out of 10 times.
I think that could be Adam Johnson. And the one thing about Adam Johnson is he's a class act. He's a proven player, and he is a form player. He has his purple patches, and I think he could be coming into one now.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, when he came on against Leeds, you could sense he was thinking, like, you know, I'm feeling great, this is Leeds, we're creating chances, I'm going to go to town here. And he didn't see enough of the ball for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that maybe they've got to look at it tactically. When Johnson's bang on form, make sure you kill him with the ball. Get the ball to him constantly, because there's this danger where he's not wanting to hugely call for the ball and demand it. He'll take up good positions, and if he doesn't receive the ball, then he can just drift out of the game.
I'm not saying this is my idea. Do you think Johnson could play as that third midfielder in the middle? Do you think Johnson could play there?
This is something that people have sort of it's been mentioned a few times in the past, sort of over the past sort of year.
You could, again, if you played the way Bally did, three in midfield and a number 10, like where he played Jacarina, I think I'll see Johnson playing there. The system now, one of two midfielders ahead of a defensive midfielder.
He's
got the discipline.
He does work hard, he does track back.
I don't think he's on the know-how, maybe. Maybe he has got the discipline.
I'm just looking at somebody who can play in that midfield three, who is going to you know, drop into spaces and be available. Because Cannavale's quite...
It's a midfield issue, isn't it? When we talk about players...
Cannavale's good at picking out that player. When he's got the ball deep, he often picks out someone who drifts into the gap. We're not, at the moment, Gomez isn't getting into that gap. Whoever plays in that... Rodwell's not getting into that gap when he played there. Someone needs to go between the lines because, you know, people... we've seen it in games like Leicester, Burnley. Teams defend for their lives in the Premier League, don't they? I mean, if you haven't got the quality, they're organised and it's hard to break them down and you need to get into that space, and we don't at the moment. There's nobody going into that pocket. When we're chasing the game, it sometimes happens, but we're just not seeing enough of it, I don't think.
I think if you go to the horse's mouth again and ask Adam about it, Adam has said that he actually prefers to be a bit more inside because he doesn't like not receiving the ball. He's happy on the wing and he's a good winger and he knows that's his natural position. But what he doesn't like is not getting the ball. And he says that if you're further in field, you do see more of the ball. I just think there's a danger. Even in games, he almost loses interest if he's not seen enough of the ball. And that's why a tactic has got to be to make sure if you get the ball, look for Adam Johnson every time.
Well, I mean, whether it's Adam Johnson or Jack Arini or any other player, it's the same problem all the time, isn't it? It's a centre midfield issue we have. Because we can't get up, we can't pull the ship forward enough for those players to receive the ball in a high enough position. Now, whether Alvarez was unfit or not, he's receiving the ball deep where he can't really do any damage. So, Rodwell was a player he hoped that was going to sort of solve those issues, isn't he? Now, he was actually having a decent game before he went off.
He's played all right recently, hasn't he, the last two games?
A few people said to me after the game, we looked good before Rodwell went off, and then it went flat a little bit. I thought it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Because what you were talking about, players, you know, taking the opportunity. We've mentioned Alvarez, we've mentioned Jack Arini. So just to mention that Rodwell looked like he was actually grasping his opportunity.
I think what sometimes it is difficult to kind of grasp about Rodwell is he's a big, physical, powerful unit. You know what I mean? So, and that is a factor on the football pitch. He's someone who can really kind of physically impose himself on a game. And that's what Poyet's looking for him to do long term. Shown flashes and signs of that, but that's the kind of key character he is. If you had Rodwell, who can play a bit as well, and Cattermole doing their jobs, then that leaves a platform for your more creative players like Jashreen and Johnson's. But you need pace as well to help. And that was such a significant difference I could see when Van Aanholt is bulleting down the left flank, and all of a sudden teams are getting stretched. It opens them up, and it's the one thing that is conspicuous by its absence in this Sunderland side.
Definitely,
pace.
Just desperate. I mean. You're looking, everyone wants the player, but it's difficult to see. I mean, we all watch a lot of football, I'm sure. I mean, I don't watch a lot of continental football, but I watch a lot of English football. And you look and you see, well, he would be good, but they aren't going to be available. You know, it's finding somebody, you know, without... If you buy somebody of a Premier League club who's in form...
It's going to cost you
a lot of money. And then the other option is buy someone who had a bit of form but's maybe gone out of form, and they might be available because they're not playing week in, week out, or somebody coming to the end of the contract. But when that happens, you're in a situation where you're going to be in competition with six or seven teams if you're trying to sign a proven Premier League player who's going out of contract. Look at the lad at West Ham, Winston Reid. There's a player who Sunderland probably should be looking at. He's an experienced Premier League footballer, and he's a decent player. But, you know, how many teams are going to be coming in for him? Plenty. So it's really...
West Ham pay big as well.
Yeah, it's really...
It's an issue. His wages is an issue
really.
There, which
it's a really,
implies he's after a lot.
It's a really difficult situation, and the pressure's on, you know, Poyet and Congan to find the players. And when they don't, you know, they get criticised, and then they end up probably... They aren't probably happy with the business they've done themselves because they can't get the players that they want, and it's such a tough situation now for Sunderland to sign the players. And I know you've seen players like Sacco go to West Ham and stuff, but London, you know, there'll probably be a number of scouts in for those types of players, and then it's like, you know, where's the money? Where's let's all go and live in London. You know, it's
well, before we talk about transfers, because Graham's mentioned Van Aanholt a few times. I know we're all dying to talk about him, really. Probably should have started with it because he was the obvious thing, wasn't he? Start with the news, of course. Van Aanholt started the game, surprisingly.
You've been waiting all podcast.
And we're going for the whole thing. We're going for the whole thing, not just the short
talk over the top of it. Drag it out a bit.
Who started that?
We're not. Well, it's only on for another 7 seconds, so.
Well, you totally ruined this, to be fair.
Well, it was your idea, so I'm happy to ruin it.
Well, Gareth just ruined that there.
Well, right. Are we playing Hallelujah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You couldn't hear, could you? Yeah. No. They haven't got headphones on.
The listeners won't hear either because Gareth just spoke.
It's all right. It's well, Gareth just heard the angelic music and decided to be the voice of God.
Well. I was elected.
You were elected the voice of God by a panel.
Right. Well, you know, it's that dubious goals panel when they're off the clock when there's no dubious goals.
Yeah.
That's what they decide.
They appoint God.
And you know, who am I to argue with the dubious goals panel?
The dubious God panel.
Very good. Well done, Luke. Thank you. That's why you came.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Took me down an avenue there. I'm not sure we'd get out of it. But Van Arnold. Graham, we've been banging on about him here his absence for ages. You've touched on it yourself there, how significant it is he's came into the side, because we've had no width previously, as well as the makeshift fullbacks have done. They weren't really expected to do that job, were they? But
no.
It just makes it's such a difference. There's so many knock-on effects as well.
Yeah, the overlapping fullback is just such a big factor in Premier League games these days, and it has been for quite a few years now, where when teams are so well matched up to each other defensively, the hardest person to mark in some respects is the overlapping fullback coming flying up, making space. And Sunderland have lacked that dimension, and it has been frustrating sometimes watching them in Van Aanholt's absence, because how many times they look so kind of flat-footed and plodding in their build-up and overly patient, as it were. So yeah, I liked his pace, and it really electrifying effect on his teammates. Whether he's the best footballer in the world is what we can talk about. I mean, I think Alonso was Gus Poyet's first choice. He wanted Alonso. I think Van Aanholt might well have been a Congerton choice.
You would guess so with the Chelsea links and stuff.
And maybe the same goes for Rodwell as well. Both, and so you have a kind of unusual dynamic where a manager hasn't got the player he wants. He's almost had a player in pause upon him, and then he has to kind of go, right, I'm going to suck it up and try and make the best I can out of this player. I think Gus has come to terms with that now, and he is trying to make the best out of Van Aanholt. There has been a question mark sometimes over Van Aanholt's temperament. When he was at Newcastle and he was a younger lad and all that side of things, but he looked hungry and he looked eager and he worked hard all the way through, and I just sort of think if you've got a team which has very little pace in it and you've got someone like him, he could be an essential part of your team.
Well, caught up with Gus after the game and asked about the attack and fullback situation and the return of Van Aanholt.
Yeah, it's a big decision. I think it's important we give credit to the medical staff and to Patrick himself. It was a big call. You know, as everybody knows, he's been training, running, doing some contact, but individually with the physios. He was starting to have the normal training, absolutely normal, full training tomorrow, 10 o'clock. We thought about it. I said, well, why no 15 or 16 hours before? You know, it's not like we tried to convince him to be clever. Take it as a, with all respect to Leeds and the cup competition, as a pre-season game for him. And he scored. He doesn't look a pre-season game, you know. He looks a perfect comeback.
But equally now, next week, I mean, Billy Jones can go back to the right, and you get the same from him on the other side as well, don't you?
Well, that's the idea when a team wants to pass the ball and make the pitch big. You know, you need wide players. We didn't have those fullbacks available for long, so it's going to be a nice week to see if we can have everybody back.
It makes all the difference, you think, the fullback
team? It should. We play what time are we playing next week? Midday? So around 2 o'clock, I'll let you know.
I left that in. I can't believe you said that in there.
I didn't realise I did, to be honest. Just sort of,
that started to happen now. We discussed that before.
I think we should put that little sound clip every time someone does a joke on this pod.
Yeah, it's awful, isn't it?
But
we might have even broke the sound on the podcast because of the curvature on the thing went up the scale. So when we listen back to that, we'll find out.
But I mentioned Graham before we heard that his inclusion has knock-on effects all over the park. The most obvious one is that Billy Jones can get back over the right and offer the same.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have versatile players. It's sometimes essential to have versatile players. And for Sunderland, that's essential when you have the full look at your fullbacks, where you're continually putting round pegs in square holes. But yeah, it'll be a massive benefit to have two players playing in their preferred positions. And when you're going back to about the injury side of things, I always remember reading when I was first starting off, and I was lamenting some key players' injury. And his point was always that he didn't mind getting players' injuries. In fact, he actually thought sometimes get players getting injured was a good thing, in the sense that if they were out for 2 or 3 months, they got frustrated, they were sitting on the sidelines, and all of a sudden they come back with a completely different focus. They might have done a bit of growing up a bit. They might be totally focused on the football. And I hope that was what the case with Van Aanholt at the weekend, that he's missed it and he's hungry and he wants to prove something, and he suddenly knows he's got an opportunity here. So the same could have applied to several of the injured players who have been missing, and also several of the players whose positions have been under threat this season. Like Minoni's had a long spell on the sidelines, and you've actually had quite a few players, and Wes Brown was rested, Virginie's been pushing for a place at centre-half, Coates has been in and out. So there is a lot of opportunities for players if they have the right attitude to try and make the mark, and I've got to hope that Poyet focuses in that direction, that the second half of the season is a chance for these sort of players to really make the mark and impose themselves for some of the season.
And I mean, talking about Billy Jones, Luke, we saw him get forward on the left. He won the penalty at Man City, but I mean, it was particularly noticeable when me and Gareth were at Aston Villa that he was getting the ball on the left. He was slowing attacks down because he had to come back on his right foot. Now that's not his fault, he's filling in. But the fact he was finding himself in those positions is proof of the kind of fullback he is. So it just, Gus just said there, obviously, didn't he? That, you know, I'll tell you after the end of the game how much difference it makes. But every, you know, if you think about it logically, everything's sort of telling you that it should make such a difference.
I think it'll make a huge difference. I think when we've had Jones at right back and Van on the left back, which I think was only one game or something. It was a Stoke game, and they both were excellent, and they both offered so much. And it's not just about the pace, which they do both offer, which we desperately need, but also, like Gus said there, the width that they offer, we don't really have any. We can't stretch teams because of not having those two bombing forwards. I mean, Virginie tries to get forward, but then he gets the ball in the position and he doesn't really know what to do with it. He can't really cross the ball or put it or do anything with it. So I think having these two to stretch teams and just creating more space, basically, is going to be so huge. And I think this could be kickstart our season.
That's a key, Gareth, isn't it? Because there's less emphasis on the centre midfielders now to, well, I guess, create something out of nothing, almost. They're looking for an opening that isn't there, perhaps, when they don't have those fullbacks getting on and supporting them. Suddenly you have two fullbacks going on, whichever one it is at the time, pulling players out of position. Yeah. Things open up for our midfielders a lot more.
Well, that's it, isn't it? You stretch the game both ways, don't you? So you start stretching it wider, and then the space gets bigger. So, but it's down, you know, once they start doing that, it's the responsibility of that those front three or four players to capitalise on that space and, you know, be a bit more adventurous. I think at times, you know, we saw at the weekend, you know, there wasn't enough people getting into the box, I don't think, at times. I'm not saying people should be flooding the box, but you got to time your runs and to come onto things, like cutbacks and stuff on the penalty spot.
And that's
but
why
maybe
he likes a forward player in the front left role, so he can get in the box from the other side,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah, but, you know, there still needs to be somebody, you know, who's got a little bit of instinct around the box who's going to maybe take that gamble or, you know, even it could be someone like Larson who's going to do that, who's going to take that gamble and make the run from deep, especially because they need to start finding a way to win games. It was a funny one at Man City because, you know, we defended solidly for an hour, went 2-0 down and then went more open and scored twice but conceded a terrible goal and went 3-2 down. I think that, you know, what you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You know, you might get a result if you play open, but you're going to concede. If you keep it tight, you might nick one up the other end, but you could get a point. It's a real quandary at the moment, and it is just a case of with two or three, said it before, two or three good players away from being a decent team, you know, a good finishing, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th, if we strengthen in the right areas, but, you know, it's so hard to find the right players.
Stephen Fletcher would be happy, Graham, as well, because he wasn't really getting crosses into the box. Gus came out last week, didn't he, and said, I will never play a system where wingers get out wide, put crosses in and stuff. But obviously the fullbacks are going to, and we saw that, didn't we, with the sitter he missed 5 yards out.
Yeah, the one thing we can all agree on is that if when it comes to breaking teams down, Sunderland are an immeasurably more dangerous side with Jones and Van Aanholt back in them. They're just going to find it so much more
easier to break teams down with them than without them. And that's what Fletcher needs. He needs crosses, but I also think he needs support. I know he's said that he's quite happy to play the lone striker, but I think he's quite happy to play the lone striker if the team players around him are creating chances. No one wants to play the lone striker where it's a thankless job. You've got your back to goal continually, and you get very few chances. I think, yeah, the full backs will create more chances. It'll open up places for the central midfielders, the creative midfielders. But I do think that when it comes to strengthening, I do think Sunderland need... I think they need another striker, and I think they need maybe get rid of a striker, and I think they need to look at the whole, you know, quality rather than quantity side of things. And I think also there needs to be an intelligent design there. I think what Gareth says is right. You just sense, and I think that's probably Poyet's frustration, there are two or three quality players away from being a real prospect, and I think that whoever comes in has to be right for this side. I think I've seen too many Sunderland teams over the years where you have got quality players but they just don't fit into the team plan. We've got a bit of that right now, so I think that when you do look at making your signings, they've got to fit in what he's got now.
And what's the probabilities of players coming in then? We mentioned a forward there. I think, you know, every man, his dog knows we need a centre forward. Gus has indicated that plenty of times. Alladon needs to go out first, right?
Mm-hmm, I agree. It just hasn't. I mean, there's nothing personal.
But I mean, from a financial point of view as well, needs to go first, doesn't he?
I think you've got to be realistic in the sense that you've only got a certain amount of money to play with a fair play budget, fair play rules. So if you can offload anyone who isn't, a key part of your team, and get money for them, then that's going to help you. And the obvious choice there is Altidore, who'll be on big money. He came on big money. You might get a transfer fee back from if you can sell him to America, for example. And he'll also be on big wages. And I'm not picking on Josie. I really am not. I'd love to have seen it happen for him. But the simple fact is, when you look at the goals he's scored and the amount of games he's had, and also if you've been there and regularly suffered the pain of watching some of the ones he's missed, it just hasn't happened for him, and it's best to kind of move on. And that will help. Getting players out who aren't part of the future will swell Gus's money pot.
I mean, Gus said in the summer, Gareth, didn't he, that the reason he didn't sign another centre forward was because the amount he already has. So we aren't really any further forward on that front yet. So you would imagine there's work behind the scenes to try and sort something out.
There'll have to be. They need to find a way to bring in, to make changes in the squad.
Centre forward number one priority, yeah?
Yeah, there's not
centre midfielder two, centre half three.
I guess the
bottom line is there's not enough goals in the squad. I mean, sort of, Fletcher, you can discuss Fletcher, we can discuss Wickham, and they could still be the answer. I don't know the answer further on down the line, but at the moment they're not that prolific, and we don't have prolific goal scoring midfielders either. So you need to find something which is going to get more goals on the side. And the obvious thing would be bringing a proven striker.
I guess they can't really do any work in the centre midfield, though. They're not going to be able to move people out and bring people in, because I mean, Bridcut, we didn't mention him, but he was very good again, I thought, and he's a more than able deputy for Callamore. Yeah. We wouldn't even
call.
I wouldn't really disrespect him by saying he's a deputy. I think he's a good player. So you got those two there. Larson's just signed a contract and he's been excellent. Hmm. And Rodwell, that's him.
But would that prevent Gomez you from going out and signing a better player?
I know, but if you've got limited funds, if you're going to change one in for one out, you can't get rid. There's no central midfielders that they can get rid of logically. They'd have to sell Giaccarini.
Not
maybe.
But
to
if
open
he was going to go
or,
and maybe bring it. So say,
but,
say
but
he,
I'm saying
say
he's not going to be. Able, they've got no defenders to sell for starters.
No.
They've got no central midfielders they can sell.
But
you could only sell a wide man or a forward to make money to spend elsewhere. And if he's going to spend that in a centre forward, you can't sell a forward and then buy a midfielder. So if you're juggling.
Say Lee Congdon on the board or whatever, say to him, okay, you can go out and get one loan player from the Premier League. What position would you?
Oh well,
it depends
on who's available.
So a player doesn't have to go out first. Yeah,
I mean,
we're just talking theoretically, aren't we? I'm not asking you to.
If you're gonna get a forward on loan, say a Premier League forward, based on, my limited knowledge of probably what's available. What are you looking for? Pace, power, strength, someone who's going to stretch teams. You've got to find a team who's going to be allowing a Willa player to go. You're going to be taking a risk, so you're looking at like a younger, probably a younger player, or someone at the other end of the career who's out of favour. I mean, Joel Campbell, I guess. I mean, he played in the FA Cup, didn't he? But I guess that he's quick. You know, Arsenal might be looking to send him out on loan. I mean, Sonogo's the other one. I don't really like the look of him at all. I think Campbell would be the one. But then you're basing that on basically the World Cup, aren't you?
Yeah. Yes, and as we've seen in the past, sometimes maybe.
Yeah, so I mean, I've got limited knowledge of what is available, but I'm trying to think of somebody who is available who is going to give
us
what we need.
Don't think about it too much, though. Just sort of say what area you would all right, ideally
sorry.
Like to
I
see.
I didn't realise this was a football podcast. We're talking about football and Sunderland, Stephen. Sorry, we should sign a footballer.
Does anyone know if Robbie Keane is available?
No, not Robbie Keane.
No, we're not going through that again.
Graham, I've asked this every time we mention Robbie Keane. Do you remember the email that the club sent out saying they'd signed Robbie Keane?
Well, they're actually kind of hard.
Yeah, I know, but they did send an email saying we've signed him in subject to a medical.
I think I mentioned this before once on the podcast, but I spent a whole summer on pre-season tour and I was looking to have a good relationship with a manager who basically was telling me that Robbie Keane was coming. It was just a case. Robbie Keane was coming. He wanted to come. All agreed. It was just a case of getting the paperwork over the line, which it was. And at one point, they did think that it was good to go, and off they went with it. But again, there's so many loose ends to tie up. The loose ends didn't get tied up, and it dragged on so long. Tottenham came in and blew something out of the water.
Wasn't it? Didn't Leeds sack the manager?
No, Terry Venables went on holiday.
That was it.
I remember because I remember there's two or three things which stopped it, and it wasn't actually a holiday. Venables went on. He filmed.
Switzerland.
He filmed Wish You Were Here. He filmed Wish You Were Here in the Barbados. He got off a chance to host Wish You Were Here in Barbados, so he went off that. So I remember really doing his nuts and he's gone where?
Can you imagine that now?
Yeah. So basically it was all held up while Terry sort of did his bit of, as what I recall, Terry did his filming, and when he came back the situation just moved on. Tottenham, who'd been searching for, I think someone that Tottenham were after, had fallen through, so they started looking around who might we get, and then they went for Robbie Keane, off he went. And you think how completely different the history of the club might have been had, for one reason or another, Robbie Keane signed at a time when Kevin Phillips hadn't quite lost heart in the way he did towards the end, and you'd have had Quinny was still going in, you wouldn't have had the Torre Andre Flo sort of situation.
What would have happened is Robbie Keane's career would be ruined. That's what usually happens.
I think there's just, what is it, Sunderland and transfers? It just
Good Johnson, remember that one at the airport? Was it McAlealy as well when he signed or something?
But it was like things like, oh, we didn't sign Robbie Keane because Terry Venables went to present Wish You Were Here. Like, we didn't, like, one of Bruce's key transfer targets got shot in the head in a bar. These bizarre situations, or we'd sign the wrong striker. Yeah. Just these bizarre situations.
I think what it is, they're all after dinner stories. And what it is that clubs are normally looking at half a dozen players for any one position at any one time, and it's always the case that there was a tale years and years ago of Alan Brown. I mean, we're going to the 60s now. Alan Brown looking for a player, and he'd heard of a young player, he heard a lot of at Scunthorpe, and he went, loved him, wanted to sign him, but the club wouldn't stumble the cash, and we lost out on Kevin Keegan that way.
I
remember Reedy once sitting down telling me about various players he'd lost out on the over the years. But I think that every manager will name the players he lost out on, who then went and became superstars, but probably not be quite so keen to tell about the players he wanted to sign, who ended up nowhere.
We signed all those ones.
Yeah.
unfortunately for us. That, I don't remember the Ortega one. That was always, since we're talking about the transfer window.
And bear in mind as well that some of them are absolute rubbish. I mean, sort of, some of them are just never going to happen. And they're just being put in there by the agent, flung out there, and, some of them linked up to players who've got no interest in at all. But it helps.
Well, it just goes, the Echo fell foul of, I remember, the very famous Jan Koller story, which was started a group of people on a message board, and they managed to get. They managed to get the agent of Jan Koller to comment.
The next time I'm on the podcast, I'll tell the full true story behind the Jan Koller thing, because that's worth a podcast in itself.
Right.
That.
Okay.
It's true that sort of generally speaking, there's a lot of manipulation in the January transfer market in terms of agents putting out various rumours as well. I mean, you're right. Sometimes, people in the bedroom can put out rumours.
Absolutely.
And they can catch fire. But generally speaking, there's an awful lot of shenanigans going on in the transfer window, which is what makes it such a frustrating time for journalists, when all you want to do is kind of put the truth in the paper, and the truth can change from hour to hour as well. The Robbie Keane stuff, for example. Quinny, I think Quinny before, now Quinny will say, I can tell you something at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it'll be true, and you can print it. And then by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it'll not be true anymore, sort of stuff. It's a minefield.
Anything else you'd like to add, Luke, before we
Stephen looks disgruntled, like we've gone off.
No, I'm just enjoying it. People don't want to listen to me.
I can't think of anything I can add to it. It's a terrible story. I really don't think.
You don't want to recycle your Metro story.
Can you imagine my years of insight in the Northeast media? I'll bring that.
Can you imagine that now?
Wish Robbie was here.
Someone like Terry Venable.
Well, not someone like Terry Venable. Well, I guess Joe Kinnear was probably as close as you could get. Didn't he go on holiday during the
January?
Yeah. Didn't he go on holiday during the transfer window because he'd had it booked? Didn't he say, I booked this before I got the job. I put that in.
I don't want to send hate mails to Terry Venable. He probably thought he could nip across, do the job, and then have Robbie signed anyway, you know, so.
Oh, dear. Okay. That's a bit depressing, isn't it?
We're going to try and get Graham back in, actually, with Chris Young and Rob Mason.
And maybe Ben up as well.
Possibly, to talk about the selection for the 100 Sunderland signings, post-war signings.
Ben will be interesting for that one.
For that. Yeah, definitely, well, we'll try and make that happen in the next few weeks, maybe when Sunderland go out the FA Cup or something. But Liverpool on Saturday to see if these fullbacks actually do make a difference. Myself, Gareth, Michael Proctor will be over on Into the Light to talk about that on Thursday. But for now, we've been We've been in association with the Love Supreme, as we will be next week.
We'll be back with them again at the start, and then we'll have been with them at the end.
Yeah. Steady here. Thanks for listening. Over and out.